Yud Beis Teves, Thursday the 9th of January. Rabbi Raphael Goldblatt, the Inyan of charity vouchers and checks that have not been honoured.
So due to the events of a few weeks ago, there are a lot of shilas that people have been asking. Many, many different shilas, we can't cover all of them, related to the questions of charities and charity vouchers and checks in general, which have not been, which have for whatever reason not been honoured, been lost, or for any other reason, and the halachic ramifications, lots and lots of different applications of this, of the lots of different shailas that come up, and many, many different shailas that have been asked. We won't cover all of them, but we'll cover the general rules, I hope, and with the applications, how they affect some of the shailas that people are asking. So we'll start with just to understand the basics of how these things work, how we define a charity account, a bank account, halachically. So a bank account is very simple. You put money in the bank. Halachically, that's a havah. The bank owes you money. The bank is your loiver. You've given the bank permission to use that money for whatever purpose they want. The zman piroi, in the time when they have to pay you back, you've agreed between you and the bank that whenever you ask for the money, depending on your account, they'll give it to you either on the spot or within a certain number of days, with whichever conditions you have in whatever account you have in the bank. So if you have a normal, easy access savings account, you've lent that amount of money to the bank with the agreement that whenever you ask for cash, the bank will give you cash. Whenever you issue a check, the bank will transfer the money that they owe you to the recipient of the check, and in that way they've paid back the money that they owe you, and that's a fairly simple that's a fairly simple agreement. That's a standard halvor. Charity accounts are more complicated. Legally, the way that Soft, Achisomach, Bobov, all the various charity accounts are defined is that they are a charity. They are defined by the Charity Commission as a charity because they are set up for the purpose of distributing funds to whatever charity they, their trustees, or the other people wish. They can do what they want. The money belongs to them. Legally, it's their money in their account, however they've banked it, and they give it out to the charities. If somebody puts money into one of these funds with his name on and with his checkbook and with his vouchers and whatever they are, legally, that is not his money. He's not given a halvor. He's not owed any money by the charity. He's given money to the charity to distribute, and they have an agreement between the two of them that the charity will distribute it according to the wishes of the person who's put it there. Yeah? So if somebody puts a certain amount of money into his account, which he describes as his account and believes is his account, and he puts it into what he calls his account in whichever fund it may be, that's no longer legally his money. He has no legal right to that money. If he did, he wouldn't be able to claim gift aid on it. They claim gift aid because they are a charity that has received that money, and they distribute the money to their beneficiaries, whoever they want to. They have agreed with the person who put the money there that they will give it according to his wishes. I discussed with a number of lawyers. Legally, they are allowed to have a separate contract with the person who put the money in. I spoke to three separate lawyers, one of whom was an expert in charity law. Legally, he didn't see any issue with having a contract with the person who put the money in there that they will follow his wishes when the funds are available. Whether that is the case or not, whether there's some sort of verbal contract, there's no written contract obviously, but whether there is some sort of understood contract between between the charity and the person who put the money there, that they will follow his wishes. I asked a number of people who are some lawyers and some people who are actually involved in running these things, and I didn't get a clear answer. Some felt definitely not. Others thought probably yes. It doesn't really make a difference to the definition of the actual ownership of the money. The money belongs completely to the charity. The person has no right to access that money, and this is legally so far. And the charity has no obligation to give back that money at any point. It's their money. Even if they do have a contract in which they've committed that they will transfer the money to whichever charity the other person desires, that's an agreement that you give the charity the money on condition that they'll give it to whichever charity you desire afterwards. If it wasn't that way, you wouldn't be entitled to get gift aid on it. If you had any ownership rights still to the money, that the whole thing wouldn't make sense. It wouldn't work. That's legally. Pardon? English law. And presumably in other countries where they have similar things, I would assume it's the same. I don't know. And I know in Israel there's no such thing. I know in Canada and Australia there are similar things. I assume they're all identical.
But if they've been doing it now for the last 50 years, surely there must be a and the entirety of the people in town have continued the same way.
Sorry, I didn't.
They've given the money on however the people say where they should send it. They've been doing that for 50 years, and that must be an obligation.
I don't know if it's necessarily an obligation. If they would decide one day, we're no longer doing it this way, we're now, henceforth, we're giving it whoever we want, we've got all that money that people have put here, and now we can do what we want with it. And I spoke to one trustee of one of these funds, I spoke to one Chancery Court judge, I spoke to a couple of other lawyers, and I didn't get a very clear answer. None of them seemed very sure whether there's actually a legal obligation to do so or not. The fact that precedence shows that they've always done that doesn't necessarily mean they're obliged. I don't know.
Charles, the people listening in cannot hear your questions.
So, legally, the money belongs to the charity. Legally, there's no financial obligation from the charity to the people who put the money there, that's for sure. There may be some obligation, when the funds are available at least, that the charity will fulfil the wishes of the people who put the money there to distribute the funds to those charities that they select. Halachically, there's much more of a discussion, meaning we know that Dina Malchus Adina, we know that that financially at least, and in certain other areas also, we are halachically obliged to follow the law of the land. There's a machloikas, if the law of the land defines a certain object as belonging to Reuven, and halachically it belongs to Shimon, who does it actually belong to? Reuven has the rights of use of it because legally he has it. Shimon has to give it to Reuven because the law is that Shimon has to give it to Reuven. The law is that it belongs to Reuven. But in actual definition of ownership, to whom does it belong? And the halacha, many poskim maintain that it's not, there are not that many nafkaminas for Esrig and things like that. But although legally it belongs to Reuven, and Shimon has to allow Reuven to use it and has no right to it at all, but halachically it still belongs to Shimon, because Dina Malchus Adina doesn't define the ownership, it defines the practical application of the ownership. It doesn't define that this Esrig actually belongs to Reuven. Reuven could not be Yotze Mitzvahs Esrig if he only owns it al pi Dina Malchus Adina, according to many poskim. However, Shimon has no rights to use it. Shimon can't stop Reuven using it. But for Esrig and certain halachas where we require actual halachic ownership, Dina Malchus Adina may well not be enough. There's discussion in a Sefer HaTshek Bahalacha, the last chapter of the very end of Chelik Beis, Perek Chof Aleph, he has a discussion of charity vouchers, and he suggests that the same premise will apply to the money in these charity funds. Apparently, this is someone from Eretz Yisrael. He came to England a number of years ago to sell his previous Sefer, and he was very excited when he discovered the existence of these charity funds, because this raised a whole new... It gave him a whole new chapter in his next Sefer, basically. And he sat down and wrote this perek, based on what he saw in Stamford Hill, actually. If you look through the perek, you can see very clearly that he was in Stamford Hill. But the basic premise that he sets out, he wants to suggest that the same halacha that we've just said, that many poskim maintain, that an esrog, which based in Dina Malchus Adina belongs to Reuven, but halachically belongs to Shimon, still actually halachically belongs to Shimon, that the same reasoning may apply to the money that's been put into charity accounts. So legally, you can only claim gift aid on that money if you've transferred ownership, with the understanding that the charity does not owe you any money. If the charity owes you the money in exchange, that's fraud. Right? So legally, you've put the money into the charity's account, the charity owns it, the charity owes you nothing. Whether or not there's a contractual agreement that they'll give the money to the charities that you request, they owe you nothing money-wise. Halachically, he wants to maintain, and the recent psak that came out from the Bezin and Gateshead wants to say the same thing. Halachically, they maintain that you can put the money into the charity account and halachically define it as a halvar, with the understanding that they owe you the money only in that they will pass it on to charities, not that you can actually ask for the money back. But halachically, you have a financial right to demand that money for charity purposes, even though legally you don't. So they want to maintain that they want to suggest that in the same way that the esrog that the law says belongs to Reuven doesn't actually belong to Reuven. Reuven has ownership, has usage rights, and has all the rights that ownership gives him, but he doesn't halachically own it. In the same way, since Dina Malchus Adina can't define the ownership, it can only define the practice, the effect of the ownership. So since halachically we can have a concept of a halvar over here, and the halvar being conditional on that money only being transferred to charities and only used for charitable use, etc., then halachically they maintain there may well be a halvar over here. Hacheg Valocha says that only applies to the money put in, not to the gift aid money. But that's his conclusion. If that's the case, then definitely, even if there's no contractual agreement between the charity and the person who put the money there to fulfil the wishes of the person who's put the money in his account. Nevertheless, there definitely is a halachic requirement that he has to fulfil those wishes, because if you define it halachically as a halvor, with the agreement being that it will be paid back by transferring it to charities whenever the person wishes, then it's irrelevant whether there's a legal contractual agreement between them, self-understood, verbal, whatever it is. Halachically, there definitely would be that commitment. So lemaisa, it seems, based on these tzokim, that the money there halachically may be considered a halvor, in which case the charity is obliged to fulfil the requests of the person who put the money there. Possibly, even legally, there is that obligation as well. That I haven't got clarity. That's the introduction. So now let's start with some of the practical shailas that people have been asking. So the first shaila that many people have asked, to varying different amounts, I've been asked ranging from a few hundred pounds to over £100,000, is can you deduct the money that you've put into a charity account, which you will no longer receive back, definitely not all of it, definitely not most of it, maybe some of it, can you count that as having given Maaseh Gel? That's the first question. That's not yet getting into the vouchers and the checks. That's just chlolos. When you put the money into the account, have you at that point already given Maaseh? So there are different degrees in Nesina Stoker in how far you've got in the process of giving Stoker. If someone is chayev, whether it's a chiyuv, whether it's a minhag toiv, whatever it is, someone wants to separate maaseh geld, and he's taken that money, put it aside, and said, this money is to be used for maaseh. Then he gives that money over to a gizbar, right? The original way everything was done, it was given over to a gizbar, to a treasurer, and that gizbar used to give it out to the aniyim. Once the gizbar has received that money, that person has been yotze mitzvah tzedakah. Yad gizbar ki yad aniyim. And that stocker, the mitzvah stocker has been given, not only the chiyuv of maaseh geld, he's actually given stocker because it now belongs to aniyim bichlolos, aniyim in general. Here, when the money's been put into a charity account, so some people wanted to suggest that they are a gizbar. They give out the money to various different stockers, and therefore halachically they may be defined as a gizbar, in which case the person has been yotze his mitzvah stocker, not only maaseh geld, he's given stocker. That, however, is extremely questionable. I'm talking about someone who only uses the money in that account for purposes that can be used for maaseh geld. Yeah? If there are many people who've been using even legal uses and some illegal uses perhaps, that it can be used for purposes that are not eligible for maaseh geld. If someone does that as well with this money, then there's no suggestion that he can have been yotze maaseh geld when he puts the money in. It's only yotze stocker once he gives it out. But someone who only uses it for charitable causes which are eligible to be considered as maaseh geld, can he say that he's already been yotze mitzvah stocker? If we define putting the money into the account as giving it over to a gizbar, which ownership-wise is true, as we've just said, legally you've given it over to the ownership of the charity, of the trust, therefore, maybe you could consider it a gizbar. This is, however, very questionable for a number of reasons. If you hold that there's a halvor and they owe the money back, then it definitely is not a gizbar. And as we've said, a number of poskim seem to take on that way. Even if we don't take on that side, even if we say that the charity owns the money and they may or may not have a verbal agreement to distribute according to the wishes of the donor, but they own the money and they have no financial obligations, still, it's not precisely a gizbar for a number of reasons. One reason why it's different from a gizbar is that the concept of gizbar, of yad gizbar ki yad aniyim, only applies to stocker of aniyim. If you give money to a shul, you've given it to the ownership of the shul. If you give money to the kehillah funds, which is used for the Torah HaKel, you've given it to the kehillah. To give it over to a fund which can distribute it to any charity that they wish, they can give it to the rebuilding of the Notre Dame Cathedral, they can give it to the victims of the bushfires in Australia, they can give it to anything they want, wherever it is, the concept of gizbar, l'choira, does not exist in that situation. Second reason, if there is a legal obligation or halachic obligation that they will fulfill the wishes of the person who's put the money there, then that would be another reason why l'choira, this is not precisely a gizbar, and somebody who puts the money there has not been yotze mitzvah stocker.
They give
it
to a non-Jewish charity, it's from my, have I been yotze mitzvah myself?
Probably not. You do give stocker to Aniye Akum Mishum Eva. Pasha is not mitzvah. It's not mitzvah stocker. That's for sure. The Notre Dame Cathedral definitely not. So, however, right. So we've lechora putting money into these into the charity fund is not at that point yotze mitzvah stocker. That's fairly clear. However, l'chora it can be defined as a hafrosha of money for tzedakah. If you've taken money and you've put it aside for tzedakah, you're still allowed to use that money, but you owe the money back to tzedakah. But you've set aside that money for tzedakah, and you plan to give it to tzedakah. Have you at that point been yotze mitzvah mice or not? You have not been yotze mitzvah tzedakah. You haven't given it to a gizbar, the aniyim, the poor people, the charities, whoever's going to be the recipient, has no entitlement to it yet. However, it's money that's been designated as tzedakah money. You're allowed to use it because Lev Bezdin must know, it's aldas, that you will be allowed to use it, but it's actually already been designated as tzedakah money. So putting money into a charity account, l'chora, is the same level as hafrosha, as separating this money, probably even more, because at that point you can't use it for anything else. So it's like putting money, setting money aside and saying, I will use this for tzedakah. What happens if somebody set money aside, designated it for tzedakah, did a hafrosha, and then that money got lost? Has he been yotze mitzvah maaseh or not? So this is a machlokes achronim. The Pesachei Tshuva in Hilchot Tzedakah, Yerodei Simin Resh Mem Tes, quotes Tshuvas Arba Turei Even, who speaks about a case of somebody who separated his maaseh money and planned to use it for his loshen is either aniyim hagunim or his relatives. It seems that his relatives are not hagunim. But he's saving the money until the right person comes along. He wants to give the money to the right poor person, either someone who he sees is really fitting to receive the money or to a poor relative of his. Then, a certain amount of time later, someone approaches him and he thinks this is a good purpose for his money. The person lives in another town. He sends it with a shliach to the other town and the money gets lost. It says in the Tshuvas Arba Turei Even, unless there was a pshia involved, and he speaks about the certain details of the case he's talking about, unless there's a pshia involved, he has already been yotze mitzvahs meiser. He has not been yotze mitzvahs tzedakah, because the oni never got the money, and no one took the money and said, I'm now being koyin this money for the oni. There was no gizbar, there was nothing. He just sent it with somebody to get the oni. But since he's already designated the money to be used for tzedakah, so chiyuv of meiser, of aser asfer milach, that he has been yotze. Chaim Kanievsky in Derech Emunah asks on this that he doesn't understand it. Why should it be? The mitzvah of Meiser, the chiyuv of Meiser, mitzvah of Meiser, inyan of Meiser, is to give tzedakah. Whether we're not maqpid to give it only to aniyim, we give it to other purposes also, but the chiyuv is to give it to whatever causes are fitting to receive Meiser gold. If the cause that tzedakah never received the money, then nothing happened. He hasn't been yotze. Chaim Kanievsky says it seems that the Tshuvas Arba Turei Even takes on a tremendous chiddush, that since Maisa Geld is called Maisa, it's based on Masa Oni to a certain extent. The Tosas in Tanis Daf Tes brings a Sifra that connects Masa Tzedakah money that's given to Maisa from to Masa Oni. Therefore, just like with Masa Oni, once you've been Mafrish, the Maisa from the produce, you've taken the Masa and it's designated for that Niyim, you haven't been Yotze the Mitzvah of Nesina, but you have been Yotze the Hafrosha, and the Tzvur is now kosher, it's no longer tevel, you can eat it, and if the maaser gets lost, you have no responsibility. Similarly with maaser geld, it's also a chiyuv hafrosha plus a chiyuv nesina. If you've done the hafrosha, you've been yotze that part. You haven't done the second part, but you have no obligation to replace the money if it gets lost. He says, that seems to be the pshat in Arba Turei Even. He's very uncomfortable with it. He says it's a tremendous chiddush. And then he says, shuv heruli, afterwards people showed me a chasm sofer in Chulin Daf Kuf Lamed Aleph, where he says explicitly not like this. So it's a machlokas, the chasm sofer, and the Arba Turei Even, whether with Hafrosha one is yotze mitzvahs maaseh. So our question, if someone puts money into a charity fund, which we're saying is not a gizbar, but is a Hafrosha of moed tzedakah, of money for tzedakah, does he have to afterwards put that money again take money again to be yotze mitzvahs maaseh, seems is a machlokes the Arba Turei Even, quoted in Pesachei Tshuva, with the Chasam Sofer. Halacha lemaaseh, since in the Shulchan Aruch, the Pesachei Tshuva only quotes Arba Turei Even. No one there seems to argue. The Chasam Sofer, even Chaim Kanievsky, had to wait until somebody else showed it to him. It wasn't on the page, it wasn't quoted in the poskim. Pashtus, the Ikar Hadin is that you yotze mitzvahs maaseh with hafrosha, with designating the money, with separating the money. That's enough that you have to look after the money, you have to distribute it to the aniyim, but that's enough that you don't have to afterwards replace the money and be yotze chavis maaseh again. Especially when we take into account the fact that according to most poskim, Maisa is not a chiyuv. Maisa is an inyan toiv, a definition of how much tzedakah one should be giving a person who is a beinoni and can afford it. This is the minimum, or this is the example, the ideal amount that a beinoni, a person who is managing to make a living okay, should be giving towards tzedakahs. So even if somebody's been mekabel always to do that and is very makrid on it, but if he would never have intended to give again in this circumstance, definitely one can rely on the Tshuvas Arba Turei Even, and consider the one's been yotze with that and not give it again. So the chiyuv of ma'aseh geld, although some would say maybe there's an inyan to give it again, but definitely me'ikah hadin, one is yotzeh chavos ma'aseh, whatever amount of money one has put into the fund. Again, if this is somebody who only uses that money for legitimate ma'aseh acceptable causes, he's been yotzeh chavos ma'aseh and he doesn't have to pay the money back, and he hasn't lost the money anyway. It was never his money, but that money that's no longer available for the tzedakahs has been yotzeh chavos ma'aseh. He has not been yotzeh mitzvah tzedakah, and the Rambam says that everybody should be yotzeh mitzvah tzedakah at least once a year, even the Onish of Yisrael, etc. That he hasn't done, and if he's not giving any other tzedakah in the whole year, he should be giving at least something, but that can be yotzeh with only a very small amount. The chiyuv of ma'aseh, he has been yotzeh and he doesn't have to give again. That's the first question. The second question, most common question that people are asking, are those people who have obligations to give tzedakah to a tzedakah, or even without an obligation, have sent a certain tzedakah voucher, what happens to that? What do they have to do afterwards? So let's start with the case of when someone had no obligation, no chiyuv to a tzedakah, hadn't made a neder, didn't have to pay anything to the tzedakah, just chose to give them a voucher. Right, so they've sent a voucher for a certain amount of money to a certain charity campaign. They process that, it's in the computer, it's been matched, and then the voucher, let's say it even gets lost, right? The voucher is no longer going to be honoured for any reason. Has that person been mekabel a neder that he's going to give this amount to the tzedakah, and the tzedakah has not received the amount, or not? Now, this, we've said previously that legally the money that's in the charity account doesn't belong to this person anyway. Halachically, some suggest that he is owed money by the charity. Right? Whether or not the charity has an obligation to fulfill his requests, to fulfill what he's asked, is actually irrespective to this question. If somebody says to a tzedakah, I'm going to give you X amount of money, and then somebody else gives it on his behalf, he's been yotzer with that. That's kinyan orev. That's kinyan orev knani. You've paid somebody else's chayv at his request, and that chayv is therefore paid up. Does the writing of the voucher constitute a neder to the tzedakah? Right? If somebody's promised money to a tzedakah and written a voucher, well, I was hoping to cover that in a lot more detail, but l'chayra, we're not going to be able to come back to that today, but l'chayra, he will still have to pay again. So if somebody has made a verbal neder, and he hasn't verbalized that he's going to give the money from this voucher thing, he's just said, I will give £1,000 to such and such a tzedakah, and then he gives them a voucher, and they haven't received the money, l'chayra, he has not been yotzer, because they haven't got the money. All he's given them is a shtar, or a request, however you want to define it. We're not going to be able to go into all that. But all he's given them is a piece of paper which entitles them to go to a certain fund, and they will, whether they're obligated to, or whether they're not obliged to, they will honour that request. When they receive the money, then the neder is fulfilled. They're not going to go and ask him for any more money. They're not going to go and say, where's the money you promised us? Because they've got the availability. They've got the way to get the money. However, he hasn't actually been yotzeh his neder by just giving the voucher. He still will have to pay again. So if somebody has verbalized that he's going to give X amount of money to a tzedakah, and he's paid with a voucher, l'chayra, he has to pay again. If so, some would suggest that the writing of the voucher itself constitutes a neder. We know that nidrei tzedakah can be even by machshava, it can be even by peh, kal v'chomer can be when it's written, and therefore the writing of the voucher itself should constitute a neder. It's written to the charity that you are giving them this amount of money, and they haven't got the money, so you should have to recompense them, you should have to pay it again. However, this is not correct for a number of reasons. First reason, if it's true that the fund is not obliged to honour the request, then l'chayra there isn't, and the writing is definitely not a neder, because all the writing would be in that situation is a request to the charity, please fulfil what I want to do, and if you want to, you can, if you don't want to, then don't, it's up to you. So that definitely doesn't have any background of neder. Even if we accept that either legally or halachically, or both, as we've been through before, there is an obligation on the charity to fulfil that request, whether it's a contractual obligation, not a financial agreement, but that the money was put there on condition that you will honour my request. Whether we accept, like a check b'halacha, that there's a halachic obligation because there actually is a halvah, then it's true that the writing of the voucher may well constitute a shtar that states that I am giving tzedakah X this amount of money. However, the writing has said in it, what the person has written, ksiva, kadibra, whatever you want to call it, what the person has written is, I will give £1,000 from the money in that account. So all that the neder is a neder to give the money from there. If there's no money there anymore, there cannot be a neder. Even if we would define it, if we say that there's no obligation on the charity to honour the request, then there isn't even a neder in the ksiva. There's it's meaningless. It's just a private letter between two individuals saying, please give so-and-so such an amount of money. I give him a hamlotza, he's worthy of receiving it. Even if there is an obligation, even if it's a halva, even if we go to the full extent and say that there is a halva involved, and they are paying back the money that they owe you by honouring your request, and that's the agreement you've made in the first place, and halachically they have to do it, then it's true that the ksiva may well constitute a neder. It may well be a promise to the tzedakah that I will give you £1,000. However, built into that neder is, we'll give £1,000 from that money. So if that money is no longer there, you don't have any right to it, so the neder is void. There is no neder. There are some want to suggest that despite the fact that the ksiva is not a neder, but because someone had in mind that he will give a certain amount of money to the tzedakah, so that's a neder behiru, a neder b'machshava. Just like hafroshas truma and hekdesh can be chal b'machshava, so nidrei tzedakah are also chal b'machshava. So if somebody had in his mind that he will give a certain amount of money to the tzedakah, then maybe that should constitute a neder. The fact that he's written it, we've said, is not a neder, either because it's only a personal request anyway, or even if it is like a check, it does have legal or halachic validity in some way, it's still, the neder is limited to be using those funds, that we can accept. But in his mind, he planned to give a certain amount of money to the stocker, so maybe it's a neder behiru. However, that's also not correct, for a number of reasons. Firstly, most poskim hold that a neder behiru is not because someone planned to give money to a certain stocker. Even if he's actualized that, even if he thinks he's given over the money, or something like that, that doesn't constitute a neder. A neder in machshava, a neder in one's mind, is when one thinks, I am being mekabel that I will give the money to the tzedakah. If somebody thinks that, just like with Hafroshas Truma, if somebody plans to take Truma, he thinks that apple will be the Truma, I'm planning to take that apple for Truma, that's not chal, nothing's been chal at that point. If he thinks in his mind, harezer Truma, thinking of focusing on a specific apple, then the Truma is chal. Many poskim can maintain that the same applies to nedarim, even though a neder can be chal v'machshava, that's only if somebody thinks in his mind, I am now making an obligation on myself to pay a certain amount of money to a certain tzedakah. If somebody saw an oni and thought, I want to give him some money, and that oni then goes away, he hasn't got any neder that he hasn't fulfilled, according to most poskim, and therefore, in our case, the writing of the check, although it's a step beyond that, because he's actually trying to give it, the chayre is not a neder v'machshava. Even according to those poskim that maintain that a neder v'machshava does become a chiyuv as soon as he thinks he's definitely giving the money and he's not going to back out, and that's already like a kabbalah. Even according to them, l'chore it's posher that somebody who thinks that while he's writing a voucher, in the same way as the voucher is a neder that's limited by that it's going to be paid from these funds, so also the neder in his mind is also. The whole plan that he has is that he will be giving it from by giving them a voucher, so he's fulfilled it. It's like somebody says to a tzedakah, he's mekabel that he will give a voucher. So he's given a voucher. If he gives the voucher, he may even have been yotzei that neder. But even if he's mekabel, he'll give a certain amount of money by giving a voucher on a certain fund, then he can't be yotzei that anymore. The neder is void. And the same will apply if the neder is behiru. However, if somebody did promise to a certain tzedakah an amount of money, if he had explicitly in his mind that he's going to use a certain fund, then possibly there's al-malismuch not to give it again. But he didn't really think about that. He just said he's going to give a certain amount of money, and afterwards he went and paid back that money by giving them a charity voucher. Then, l'chore, he does have to give the money again. He hasn't been owed to the nether because they haven't received the money. That is true whether we take on that the charity is not obliged to fulfill the requests of the donor, or whether they have a contractual commitment, or whether they even have a halachic commitment, it's irrelevant. The charity, according to the suggestion, there's a halachic commitment, still has an outstanding debt, but the charity has no money to pay the debt, and there's no one else who's obliged to pay that debt. The charity may have an outstanding balance that somebody has rights to give out to tzedakahs, but that's never been honoured, and therefore the person has not fulfilled his neder when he passes that on. Unfortunately, we don't have time to go through more shilas, but more detail of the questions of how this applies to checks and other things and all sorts of transactions and things that have been passed from to one person and then on to more people. We won't have time for that today. So in short, Maisa Gelt one has been Yotze. Yesh Omrim that there's still an Indian to give it again, but Min Hadin one has been Yotze. Nedarim, unless we can define the neder as limited to being paid from a specific fund or in a specific way, one does have to pay again if they were verbalized, but the writing of the voucher does not constitute a neder, and that does not have to be replaced.